Hello and welcome back to Channel 9 Live here at Ignite. Now we have an interview section where we're going to have a look at some of the things, again, that we saw inside of the keynote around Azure Active Directory. And doing that session with me is Alex Simons, Director of PM for Azure Active Directory. If anybody knows about Active Directory and what we've been doing there, it is you.
Oh, well, thanks, Simon. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm really excited.
So let's just start off with something very, very simple. What is it that your team actually does and looks after inside of Microsoft?
Yeah. Well, so I'm responsible for the program management team for the identity and security division at Microsoft. So my team's responsible for setting the strategy and the future direction, as well as figuring out the feature set based on our customers, what they want, what they need, for the next versions of all these products as we go, including Active Directory, Azure Active Directory, all of our rights management services, Microsoft Identity Manager, and the Microsoft Account System as well.
So literally every single identity touchpoint inside of that Microsoft uses falls to your team.
Yeah, our team really is the center of expertise in Microsoft for identity and for all of the security services that protect identity.
Cool. So inside of the keynote itself, we actually saw quite a lot of cloud stuff for Azure Active Directory, but there was also some on-premises stuff as well. There was advanced threat analytics, which looked really incredibly exciting. There was queues out of the door for the session that that happened the other day. What actually is it? Where did it come from? How did advanced threat analytics happen?
Well, so advanced threat analytics is a key part of our overall vision, right? Like, we know that customers are going to be in this hybrid state of having on-premise identity that extends to their cloud identity for a long time, maybe even 10 years for some customers. And our goal is to make sure we can provide them all of the monitoring and security capabilities they need both on-premise and in the cloud, so they know that not only do I have a great identity control plane, but that I can also see what the health state of that plane is and what my security posture is. So Microsoft Advanced Threat Analytics is a key part of that. It's the piece that on-premise can watch your Active Directory and all of the network traffic coming in and out of that Active Directory and tell you, look, which set of users are logging in from where? Are they doing unusual things? Are they getting to resources they shouldn't? Is someone trying to like do a TGT attack or a pass the hash attack? We can detect all of those things inside your corporate network. And then soon, we'll extend that to the cloud as well so that you can have a kind of a hybrid view across your security posture and your identity system all the way from Azure Active Directory back to Active Directory on-premise.
Because this is kind of some of the stuff that we've had in Azure AD for quite a while around the ability to see whereabouts in the world people are logging on from and to work out if they have any impossible travel, I think is the term we normally use for that. But now we can do that same thing on-premises, which it's pretty unique to actually be able to have that kind of capability. It would have taken you probably months of digging through log files previously in order to find that information.
Yeah.
So now we can you kind of see that this is going to make it so that organizations have the ability to understand when there's an attack in progress and potentially mitigate it there and then.
That's right. In fact, like customers, we've done a lot of work in the cloud to enable this, right? And every customer I talk to, though, says, hey, I love what you're doing in the cloud. Can you do that for us on premise?
Yeah.
And that was really the motivation that got us going on, okay, we got to find a solution here and why Microsoft Advanced Threat Analytics makes sense. So now we can give you visibility into things that are happening on premise that really traditionally have been a blind spot for corporate IT. Right? They haven't really been able to see these kinds of attacks, these kinds of actors, and see that they're coming from weird locations, they're doing strange things. And we do that with a really interesting combination of techniques. So we have one set of techniques which just look for kind of misconfigurations in your environment.
Yeah.
So places where maybe a system is passing a username and password in the clear, or it's using an unprotected LDAP bind.
Right.
So we can just show you places where you just need to go kind of reconfigure things to improve your security. We have another set of attacks that we can detect that are based on known techniques that attackers use. So
things
we can
like
detect things like pass the hash or overpass the hash or directory enumeration, just things that are, in fact, 35 different kinds of attacks that are commonly used as people try to get into your environment and escalate sideways until they can finally get into an account that has high privileges. Right? And then the third set of things we can detect are all based on machine learning techniques where we build up an object graph of all of the people and the devices and the servers that are inside of your organization. And then we start looking at the interactions between those. And the machine learning learns what normal interactions are like. So like it would know that, well, Alex comes in every day between like 7:30 and 8:30, and he logs into four applications, and he uses two PCs. Mm-hmm. Right? So all of a sudden, if I'm logging in the middle of the night from like six different PCs and going to like 20 different applications, the machine learning system will catch that and then be able to show you in an attack timeline exactly what's going on. And then you can also go look and see at all of those PCs, for instance, which other attacks maybe they've been involved in. So it's a great way to explore around and get a really solid view of all of these internal threats that maybe you couldn't ever see before.
So it sounds like that's the kind of thing that's going to spark a lot of questions for folks. So if you do have questions, drop them into the live feed on channel9.com, and we'll actually go away and check those out. Sorry, channel9.msdn.com. And we'll go and have a look at those questions, and we'll try and answer any of your questions live if we can. So the question that I have around that is, it would potentially be able to tell if somebody was trying to do something a little bit strange. It could even, I guess, find out that you've got a rogue admin inside of the organization and be able to start to see some of that kind of behavior as well.
Yeah, you particularly want to watch those kind of administrative accounts, right? So you probably want to put some kind of privileged identity management system in place, but even once you've got that, you want to make sure you're watching those privileged identities and being able to see, okay, which machines are they logging in from, which kinds of resources are they managing, and are you seeing unusual behavior, right? And so that is the kind of thing our machine learning system can pick out for you, because most admins don't use that many machines. And in corporations that are really doing a good job, they've actually set aside separate, isolated machines that admins do their admin tasks on. So if all of a sudden you saw an admin, the system, ATA, starts seeing admins doing tasks from other machines rather than that one, well, then you know you have a problem.
Yeah, it's telling you something is a bit wrong. So you also just mentioned privileged identity management. Your guys have brought privileged identity management into Azure AD. What's the implementation like for doing that? How does it kind of work? What are the mechanics around it?
Oh, it's about one of the easiest things you can do in Azure AD, right?
Okay.
What you do is you go into the role manager in Azure, and you pick out the roles that you want to have managed by privileged identity management. And then you select which set of users can have access to those roles, and you set the amount of time that they're allowed to be in it. And then you're done, right? So now what you've set up is a system where there's very few people who are actually in a privileged role at any time. That's nice because then there's fewer accounts that are worth attacking, right? So that's a big improvement in your security posture. And then so if I want to do some administrative tasks, I come in and I request the ability to get into that role, and that can be an automatic approval or it can be a manual approval, right? I get into the role to do the things that I want, and then I'm automatically withdrawn from the role in a set amount of time. So maybe 2 or 3 hours to do something, and then I get pulled out, and now my account isn't valuable anymore. Right, so that's a really big win in terms of cutting down the attack surface that's available. And in addition, it gives you really nice auditing. So if you have to go back and see what happened, you can see every time someone requested, who approved it, what time the elevation happened, what time I was de-elevated. You know, so all of those things give you both really great kind of things for compliance, but also if you have to go back and do forensics later, you've got a really nice data trail to look at.
Yeah, and that's one of the most important things, isn't it? Having that data trail in order to be able to go back, look, and understand and see exactly what's gone on inside of the organization. It really is one of those things that Active Directory and Azure Active Directory does really well now. The audit reporting is really clear, which is kind of cool. What about in terms of other ways of discovering what's happening inside of the network? You've got, you showed off, in the keynote, we had a look at Cloud App Discovery, which went into GA just yesterday, I think, or this week. Why is Cloud App Discovery important for us?
Well, as you're thinking about it's the same kind of thing. If you're thinking about your security risk footprint and you're thinking about data leakage protection, the first thing you need to know is, well, what are all the cloud apps people are using, right? In fact, a year ago, as we started going out and kind of telling people about Azure Active Directory and the things they could do with it, the most common question I got back from CISOs and from the director of IT was, well, what apps do my people use? And usually they think it's a pretty small number, you know? I mean, they probably are using Box and Dropbox and Salesforce, and they can name a few others. But then when you run Cloud App Discovery, what you find is it's a gigantic number, right?
Yeah.
It's usually 8 or 10 times more than anybody thought. So what's nice about that is, first of all, at the beginning of any project where you're trying to really bring all of that into your corporate compliance boundary, right? It gives you a way to start the list and say, okay, look, I've got all these problems. Let's go down the list one by one and start figuring out what we're going to do about it. Well, I want to endorse Salesforce, so I'm going to add Salesforce to my Azure AD. I want to endorse Dropbox, I'm going to add that in as well. But these other file sharing things scare me, right? So I'm going to block those, and I'm going to go out and educate all the people who are using those that now our corporate standard is Dropbox. And we even give you the list of all the people who are using those other file sharing services, for instance, right? So that you can go start educating them around, well, the thing that does what you want that the corporation wants you to use is Dropbox. Let's see if we can't get rid of some of those other ones.
That was, I was doing some conversations here, and it was actually one of the first things that people brought up that they wanted. They want the ability to discover what's being used inside of their organization, because they're lacking the kind of telemetry that maybe we take for granted a little bit now when we're building our products, that actually tells them what people are using.
Yeah.
Most organizations don't know what people are using anymore because it's not coming from the central corporate source. They've brought it in themselves.
No, in fact, sometimes I think a lot of us are a little bit like this, like, oh, if I don't look, I won't see it.
Yeah.
Right? But it gives you kind of almost like a radar, right, that where you can see what's going on in my environment and what are all the things people are using, and then bring those in. And then when a new one appears, well, Cloud App Discovery will tell you about a new one, and then you can go find out what to do about that and bring it in, or maybe educate somebody on a better choice instead. It's just a really nice way to get kind of a compliance boundary in place and monitor it to make sure that people are using the things you want them to and that they're not bringing in new things that you don't want them to.
It seems like we're making a lot of investment into that particular space, building telemetry that's going to be useful to customers. Are we doing anything with that kind of telemetry ourselves to, I don't know, build out more of what they're using or something?
Yeah, well, so in fact, a lot of the things that we give customers access to is telemetry. We use similar sets of data ourselves internally. So every day I get up and I look at a dashboard that tells me, look, how many people used Azure Active Directory last night? What features were used the most? Were there any features that people were not having success using? Did we get new customers using new features they haven't used before? Like, that's what I do. Basically, I get to the office, I turn on the coffee machine, mm-hmm. and I turn on my dashboard and start exploring to see, okay, what's changed in the last 24 hours in the system, and are the things that are either exciting or that we should go make sure we take care of.
So I guess that telemetry has helped us to build some kind of new ways of thinking about configuration as well. So I'm thinking kind of specifically about conditional access and the control that that gives us, because conditional access gives us that extra level of ability to say something isn't right with this particular component of our system, so let's make a decision about it.
Yeah.
How does that actually interact with Active Directory and...
So conditional access, I think of as kind of almost the secret sauce to the Enterprise Mobility Suite, right?
Yeah.
So it's a policy-based system inside of our authentication system, okay? So what it lets you do is declare policies that take into account a whole bunch of environmental context. So things like, okay, how did the user log in? Did they log in with 2FA? Did they log in from a weird location? What are the attributes of that user? What groups are they members of? What kind of device are they coming from? Is it one that's registered with your company or not? Are they coming from a device that's been managed by Intune? Are they coming from a device that's been that has encryption turned on and PIN protection and those kinds of things? What kinds of app are they trying to access? Is it a high sensitivity app or a low sensitivity app? You know, if they're trying to get to the employee handbook, maybe you're not too worried about it. If they're trying to get to the secret recipe, right, then you're worried about it.
Yeah.
Right. And then we can also take into account the location that they're coming from. So are they coming from inside your corporate firewall, outside your corporate firewall, from a set of like known bad IP addresses, things like that. You can take all of those as input into your policy, right? So you declare sets of policy that then on the fly in real time are evaluated based on that context. And then you can decide, oh, well, for this user, I want to require an extra multi-factor authentication before they're able to get to that resource because they're outside my firewall, right? Or for this user in this group, let's say I've got somebody who's in the exec group, right? They're able to get to the SharePoint that has the SEC reports on it, but no one else is.
Yeah.
Right. So it lets you have kind of like coarse-grained authorization around all of those resources based on all that contextual information.
So I guess one of the things that it's going to do is if something's wrong, it's going to start to mitigate that issue. It's going to start to prompt to mitigate the issue.
Yeah.
On the client device.
So what you'll see is that as we add more and more policy control points, one of the things that we want to make sure we do is indicate back to users why is it failing, right? So your device is in a bad health state. Let's give you the instructions you need to go get Intune installed and to get it back to a good health state, for instance. So you'll see more and more of those kinds of flows. Or, oh, this is a highly sensitive SharePoint site. Let's make sure that you're doing an extra MFA for that. So you'll see those kind of like on-the-fly mitigations driven by the conditional access engine.
And I suppose that one of the places where that's most useful is when you are in a situation where you can't directly enforce a policy on a device. So the thing that springs to mind there for me is, if you've got an Android device, ultimately, the owner of the Android device is the person that's in control of it. So what happens if they decide not to accept PIN policy or decide not to accept encryption?
Yeah.
You can put conditional access in place to say, if they decided not to accept, then they get no access.
That's right. They get no answers, or they get instructions back on how what it would take to actually be able to get the access.
Yeah. So I guess it's kind of like a way of thinking of it could be a little bit like desired state configuration for servers is conditional access for endpoint devices.
Yeah,
because it's always going to make you go back to compliance.
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Right. And you can. What's cool is you can use it across all of the cloud applications that Azure AD protects. So Office 365, like you would expect, but all those other applications that we protect, as well as on-premise applications using our cloud app proxy. Right. So you can use that one conditional access point to enforce access to all kinds of applications and corporate resources.
Now that's an interesting point. Let's just talk for a minute about the cloud app proxy, because there's been some really good changes to cloud app proxy over the past few weeks. What does the cloud application proxy or the Azure AD application proxy do?
Yeah, well, so what the Azure AD app proxy is for is to let you have cloud identities, right? So let me give you one example, right? You've got executives with iPads. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to connect from home or they want to connect from a Starbucks and they want to get access to a set of online reports in SharePoint.
Yeah.
Right, like cloud app, our Azure AD app proxy is designed for exactly that, right? So they can register that device, they can get it into management, and then once they're authenticated with that device, we will bridge back to the on-premise SharePoint site without you having to expose it through your DMZ or anything like that, right? So we authenticate them, prove who they are, prove who the device is, bridge back to the on-premise SharePoint site so they can get access to it, right? Load up the reports they want on that iPad, right? Without you having to go through all of the mess of how do I configure my DMZ and put extra servers and all those things in place. And what's really cool about it is that, because iPads don't support Kerberos, right?
Yeah.
So the agent that we put on-premise actually does all of the negotiation between they were authenticated in Azure AD, now let's go get the Kerberos constrained delegation token and use that to access the SharePoint site, right, so that then I can get that page onto my iPad.
And you're getting it securely still because we have KCD in place on the on-premises side and everything is authenticated.
That's right. And there's no way since it's all done through a cloud proxy and an outbound agent, there's actually no way for anybody to call in through that. It's a very secure implementation. Basically, the agent sits and just checks for, is there anything I'm supposed to perform? And it's only able to perform against the applications you give it rights for.
And you're also doing, we also authenticate into Azure AD before you can do anything.
Oh, yeah, you have to pre-authenticate.
You're
pre-authenticated. You have to pass all of the tests and conditional access before you can even talk to the app proxy to get to the thing on-premise.
Wow, so it really does put you into a very secure position to publish with that particular approach.
Yeah.
One of the questions that we've had come in, and you can ask as many questions as you want on the Channel 9 site, one of the questions that we've had come in is from Dan, and there's rumors that in the future, it'll be possible to join devices to Azure AD. Any comments?
Yeah. Well, so for those of you who kind of follow the blogs closely, you'll have seen that on several different Microsoft blogs now that have talked about in Windows 10, mm-hmm. you'll be able to join a Windows 10 device to Azure AD.
Yeah.
Right. So we haven't given a lot of details about that yet, but it is coming. And in fact, next week, you'll start to see a whole series of blog posts about that capability and what it does for you. So just make sure you watch the Active Directory team blog, and you'll see a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of very good information coming on exactly how that works. A few of the Windows 10 sessions here, one included, actually had demos of doing the connection, but we didn't really
know what we were doing. It's not a secret. It's just that we're now starting to tell people about it.
Yeah, we're just starting to make that completely crystal clear that it's going to be possible to do that.
Yeah.
We've been signaling for quite a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually,
it's very popular. Right? Everybody loves the idea that I can have one way to sign into my corporate PC, do it all through the cloud, and not have to worry about, like, I have to go in and domain join it anymore and image the device and all that. It's really a big benefit.
So where does an idea like that come from? I mean, it seems to me relatively obvious that we should make it so that PCs can be domain joined. And we had a lot of people asking us throughout the course of Windows 8 and 8.1, why can't I sign in with my domain credentials or something? Where does the idea to actually build that out into Azure AD and the fundamentals from building that inside of the program side come from?
Yeah. Well, so I wish we had had that in Windows 8.
Yeah. Right?
But really, Windows Azure AD, or at the time Windows Azure AD, and now Azure AD, wasn't at the point where it was ready to do it, right?
Yeah.
But we've had lots of customers asking very eagerly, and a lot of people who have said, hey, I'm using my work PC, but I'm logging in with a personal Microsoft account, and then I have to put in another account to get to Office 365. That's just messy, right? So we've had a lot of customer requests that kind of have reinforced our desire to go do that work.
So it really is that we're building what the customers are actually asking us for. So people are able to let us know when they're talking to us in meetings and account briefings and that kind of stuff, what they want. And we take that on board and actually start to build out the kind of scenarios that they are looking to go for.
Yeah. In fact, more than ever, we're trying to be very, very customer driven. In fact, I talk to my team about how it's really important to be focused on the outside world, right? Like, what do our customers want? What are our competitors doing? Mm-hmm. And how do we get really good at understanding that market and what's going to excite customers and really give them differentiated value? And spend a lot less time focused internally on what's going on at Microsoft. Right.
Yeah,
so, like, for instance, we have a customer advisory board of about 140 companies now who we are constantly vetting new ideas with and getting feedback from. And essentially, they kind of, what they want kind of dictates for us what's the work order, right? Like, if they need this set of new features, they want this capability, that just goes into our burn down lists and we start working through it. And every 6 months we stop and we reorder the burn down list and make sure that based on their feedback we've got it right, and then we just keep working down the burn down list. But even on the fly, we're changing that burn down list all the time. So for instance, we have a whole set of customers who are working with our customer success team, and that's a new team inside of our R&D teams at Microsoft. So like, I have a customer success team for Azure AD and for Azure RMS, and they are engaged with customers from the first day, helping them get live with these services, right? And making sure that they can figure out how to configure them and that they're working well for them. And if we find that there's something that's blocking a customer or an issue that they need an extra feature or whatever, right? Those things come in. I think of that as like our fast twitch muscle. Those issues come directly into the research and development team now, and we can put them right into the burn down and just move other things out. So it gives us the ability on very short cycles, sometimes even 2 and 3 week cycles, to hear from a customer, get a feature improvement in that unblocks them and gets them able to use the service. And much rather be doing that than dreaming up new things on a whiteboard in Redmond.
And I guess that's one of those things that we have actually been able to really embrace with the way that we've embraced cloud services inside the company. The ability for us to create something and then just ship the feature is incredible.
It's probably my favorite part of this job is that we can turn things so quickly, right? And there's just this tremendous sense of accomplishment, right? A customer asked you for something, they were blocked, they were having trouble, whatever, and 3, 4, 5 weeks later, you can fix it and have it up and running for every customer. And the mails we get back from customers when we do that, they're just like, oh, wow, we just never thought Microsoft would be able to do this kind of thing. So every time one of those comes in, it makes the whole team's day.
Yeah, it's nice to get the good feedback, isn't it?
It's nice to be able to help customers so quickly.
Yeah, it's very cool. So when you think about all of the things that you're releasing now, that cadence is so quick. It always feels like every time I go into the portal, something new has gone into preview. What are some of the most exciting things that you think have gone into preview over the course of the past couple of months?
Yeah. Well, so you're right. Over the last year, we did 72 updates to the service, so more than one a week, right? But there's a lot of exciting new ones that have turned on recently. So you were mentioning some of the improvements to the app proxy. One of the big ones that customers asked us for was the ability to use custom domain names, right? So then rather than appproxy.onmicrosoft.com, now it could be, Contoso's app, right? So it's app.contoso.com and they can get to those things. Like, that was a really big feature request.
And presumably with that, they have to then give us the certificate so that it's been signed by...
That's correct.
Yeah. Because normally we just sign everything if we're using cloudapp.net or...
Yeah, no, we give you the ability to upload the certificate so that it all works.
Okay.
So that's one of the ones recently that I've been the most excited about. But every week we keep shipping new things, right? Like if you follow the AD team blog, you'll see it's every time, every week, sometimes multiple times a week, I end up posting about new things that we've put up. And we got a whole bunch of new things coming soon. It's really fun to be in that kind of like high speed, really innovative business.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's really great about the way that you blog about those things and see that speed coming out is that actually it's all in one place. So it is just blogs.technet.com/b/AD.
Yes, that's right.
And it's a very easy blog to go and find because it's only got two letters, which is kind of cool. But it's also a nice central location. And one of the things that lots of folks say is, where do we find the information about what's happening inside of the services? And actually the blogs are becoming one of the best resources for finding what's new inside of our services.
Yeah. We try really hard to make sure that every new feature, every new capability, every change that we make is documented in the blog.
Yeah.
And it really is a great resource because generally all the blogs talk about the new feature and then they give you step-by-step instructions on how to use it, or they give you a link to step-by-step instructions on how to use it. So you really can use it as a resource to keep up with what's going on, but also to go back if there's a new feature you're thinking about using, right? Then you can go back and look in the blog and find the way to get to, okay, how do I set it up? What was it meant for? What kinds of scenarios is it useful for?
Yeah. It is a fantastic resource to be able to go back to and find things. And I think that kind of stuff, being able to discover features is really helpful. Having the preview tags on the new features inside of the tool is very, very useful. I think one of my favorite things that I've seen come out of your team most recently has been the changes with Azure AD Sync as well. And that's a pretty profound set of capabilities that we've actually added in there.
Yeah. For us, it's really important that that first step of kind of connecting your on-premise directory to your cloud directory is a simple, straightforward process, right? So we've been working really hard and continuing to make progress on how simple can we make it, how easy can we make it. So about a year ago, we shipped an update to our DirSync product, which at least got it to the point where with four clicks, you could get live,
yeah.
Right? Then we shipped Azure AD Sync, which is kind of the successor to DirSync. And what that did was it added support for multiple forests, because it turned out that was one of the hardest things to set up when you're connecting from an on-prem AD to cloud AD, right? And now we continue to work on that. So with Azure AD Connect, which brings all of the technologies together, right? The ability to configure DirSync and AAD Sync, the ability to handle multiple forests, the ability to configure your ADFS server if that's what you need to do, and plus all of the extra things like, well, I want to be able to write users that are mastered in the cloud back to on-premise, brings it all together into one package, right? So Azure AD Connect gives you basically a click-through wizard, and it's a re-enterable click-through wizard, right, that lets you go through and configure everything you need to connect your on-premise AD to your cloud AD with one simple tool.
And I haven't taken actually a look at this firsthand yet, but it's now, Connect is able to give you information on some telemetry on the health of your environment as well, isn't it? It can tell you what's happening with your on-premises components, your ADFS.
Yeah, that's right. So the first thing that the AD Connect tool does is at the end, it actually from the cloud in checks and verifies that everything's configured correctly, and we can see the endpoints that we need to from the cloud to get things done. But in addition, it will deploy the AD Connect health agents for you if you have on-premise ADFS servers. So then you get a cloud dashboard that shows you the health of your ADFS servers. What's the latency of login times like? Are they patched? Are their load balancers working? How are people logging in? Where are they logging in from? What apps are they going to? So you get this really amazing visibility of ADFS, which is a critical part of infrastructure for a lot of companies as they think about how to let people make use of the cloud in a way that's secure. Right, and then you'll see us very quickly expand that to include both the synchronization services, your on-premise AD, your cloud AD, and all of the applications that we monitor from the cloud for you as well.
And I guess that's going to get even more important as people actually start to deploy Windows 10 and move their Windows 10 workloads over to using Azure AD as well and authenticating from there. We're probably going to start to see more and more people actually starting to roll out Azure AD and Azure AD Sync on a more mass basis than they do today.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. And in fact, what we've seen is that when people turn on Azure AD Connect Health, they can really quickly see the problems that they have in their ADF infrastructure that they maybe weren't aware of. And in fact, we monitor for a bunch of customers now their ADFS infrastructure for them using that and have been able to get in and proactively point out to them, oh, you know what, you've got some latency problems or you're having a high failure percentage. So we can get on the phone, call them up, and help them correct that.
Yeah, so it's presumably helping inform us around the product as well, and where things can just be tweaked to make them a little bit more easy to deploy or a little bit more reliable.
Absolutely, yeah. It gives us critical data on what's the thing that might have been hard that we didn't realize was hard.
And it's presumably one of those things that we didn't used to be able to get good data on because it was behind the firewall.
That's right.
And a little hidden away.
We were kind of blind in the world of packaged products on-premise, right? We didn't really know how they were being deployed, how fast they were being deployed, what problems people were running into, what the health state of those was. And now that we can, most of the services in the cloud and the on-premise components we can monitor for you, right? Like we just have much better visibility, and it gives us the ability as a development team to really focus on the critical areas for improvement that we didn't know about before.
Awesome. It's an amazing set of capabilities that your team has built into the product that Azure AD is right now, and it's a fantastic set of features. Everybody should really go take a look at Azure AD and what we've done there, and also I think Advanced Threat Analytics.
Absolutely.
Cool. It's very difficult not to put Azure in front of everything now.
Yes. Yeah. If it's got an A, it's got to be an Azure,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah. So it's Advanced Threat Analytics is a fantastic looking product at this point in time. And I think it's only going to get better and get much more capabilities built into it. So
yeah. Great. We're all really excited about it. It's available for preview right now. So for free, go download it, get it running. I suspect it will show customers scary things in their enterprise they didn't know about before. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is a very good thing to expose that stuff. So we're now going to hand back over to the live stage where there's two gentlemen who I'm not sure that anybody really has ever heard of before. Somebody called Mark Rasidovich and Mark Manassi. They're actually doing a session on the cloud. So let's hand back down to the live stage, and we'll get started with their session.